And one of the things that we know that when you fast, it completely changes gene expression in the microbiome. In fact, fasting resets your microbiome.
Welcome to the Superwell podcast, your source for truly holistic and original perspectives on health and happiness. Each week, we take true dives into the key areas of life with true leaders and true conversations. It's your time for a Superwell life.
G'day, Superwell team. Welcome back to this podcast. This week we had a solutions episode recorded and it is all about fasting. Given it's February and people are ramping up with the Feb fast idea of restricting something, we decided it would be an opportune time to have a discussion around the broader concept of fasting, intermittent fasting and so forth. And it's become a very popular method and lifestyle choice in the last few years for people to adopt in terms of a diet kind of management strategy. So we wanted to dive in and help people understand what's happening in the body when they do that and what are some of the benefits that they may receive by participating in some intermittent fasting or some proper fasting, like longer term fasting as well. So I sat with Fiona Chin, our naturopath, who is an expert, a lover of fasting. She's done extensive amounts of fasting in her time, lots of different methods. So she's well versed in the area, and it was a great chat. So we hope you enjoy it. And as per usual, if you have any questions, just jump online and shoot us some messages. Enjoy.
Okay, it's February. Everybody's fasting.
Really? Is everyone fasting in February?
Isn't that what you do?
Do you know, I've never heard of Feb fast. Well, I know people go off things in February, but yeah. I actually didn't know that people fasted in February. This is new to me.
Well, it's not really fasting, is it?
No.
It's abstinence.
Yeah, okay. Really? Yes. Yes, people give up alcohol. That's the main one we only see in February. Chocolate.
But it's a good time to have a conversation about fasting. So
let's do it.
That's what we're here to do. Now, it's become a bit of a fad, maybe, in recent times. But it's something that's been practiced forever.
Yeah.
It's probably just more of a fad in the, inverted commas, health and wellness.
Yeah.
Commercial marketplace,
yeah,
is probably the best way to put it, in that people have found a way to try and commoditize fasting. But it's something that I know I have been doing for a long time. You have,
yeah,
generations, thousands of years, people mm-hmm. have been doing it. So what we want to do is have a great conversation around what fasting has been. The role it's played through our evolution as a species,
mm-hmm.
and where it sits in the modern day,
yeah,
what happens in the body, and how people can probably...
How to fast and the different types of fasts. And,
integrate it into into their life. Before we get into it, though, I think it's important to note that this is not an all-encompassing information podcast, and that if people want to try some of this stuff, you can have... Obviously, use the information, but you should get some advice. Speak to someone.
Yeah.
Make sure that you're doing it correctly. And if you are listening, we're having an information session next Monday, 7 days from today. We're recording today. So this podcast will probably come out on Wednesday. So if you listen to it between then and Monday, the 17th of Feb, you can jump on and we'll be doing a Facebook Live to answer people's questions to support them if they want to start trying to do some fasting.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's get into it. So, let's go through a bit of a historical lesson on fasting.
Sure.
I'm not sure whether you're prepared for that.
Well, that's not too bad. I'm not, but I can easily. Let's talk about it. I mean, it was naturally part of our hunter-gatherer diets, but maybe not so much from they went, oh, fasting's cool, let's do that. More from a, we've got no food and we're going to naturally fast. And I think, too, if you look at... even my grandparents, if someone got sick, they'd fast. There's that old adage, if you have a virus, you starve it by fasting because it will make you feel better and it reboots the immune system, which...
We're going to talk about it again later.
Yeah, recent studies actually show that's true. So I think it was just part of you know, when their food wasn't available so much, and, you know, if people got sick and they were maybe a little bit more in touch with their bodies and things like that, fasting was just something that people utilized to feel better. Something that was enforced on them if, you know, people have to fast. I mean, there's definitely still cultures that fast now just as part of what they do. And you look at religious histories, you know, we've got Ramadan where they fast and they only eat between, I think it's a 4-hour window. And there's lots of cultures and religions that have fasting as part of their history and as part of their practices, that they do that every year, whether it be a big long, like Ramadan, a long fast, or whether people fast once a month for religious reasons. They talk about in the Bible, you know, Jesus went out into the desert and fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. So, yeah, we've got lots and lots of references to fasting.
Yeah, well, I think this, we could categorize that loosely into two different reasons. Then, could we? Nature-enforced fasting, in that over time, sometimes we couldn't get out and hunt. We couldn't gather stuff, whether it was, you know, monsoon season or
snow season
or
bushfires.
You know, there were things that prevented us from being able to acquire food, which is why our bodies have the ability to store fat and store nutrients, is because genetically we were required to through time.
Yeah,
And we'll probably get into that one when we do the weight loss podcast. We'll leave that for another day. But then there's, you know, human enforced fasting, which has been happening for millennia, based upon customs and traditions and cultures. So over time, that's always probably been there, but more recently, it's become very popular again. Popular for a number of reasons. Maybe weight loss is a big one.
Yeah, and I think the studies, the latest studies that they're doing fasting on and fasting mimicking diets and things like that, and the effects that it has on really things like degenerative disease, being cancers and all your Alzheimer's, I think is really where the studies first started, and the effects that it has on memory. And then, of course, it's now been studied along a whole variety of different things. And so I think the latest research has made it super popular. And it seems to, so far, it works in pretty much anything where the immune system and inflammation are involved. Yeah.
And then it's interesting that there's probably preceding this little period of time, a part of history where it was almost the opposite of fasting. Because access to food has become so amazing for our species, and that we have such readily, you know, accessible food.
Yeah.
Not always the best quality, but food is everywhere.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, our species has probably moved away from the hunter-gatherer lifestyle to a very routine 3 meals a day.
Yeah, and even more so. Yeah. Like, I don't know you, but when I went through uni, it was all about, especially because, you know, adrenal fatigue was really popular when I was studying. And so it was like, you know, those people should eat 6 more meals a day, snack right throughout the day, graze, eat regularly. So, you know, you're digesting 24/7 kind of thing. Mm. That was really the thing that I was taught when I went through uni that was really popular.
Yep. And that that could have even been preceded by things like the Great Depression.
Yeah.
You know, I often think about this, you know, the notion of you have to finish your plate. It's something that I still struggle with, even though I just hate leaving food behind.
Yeah, I grew up with that. You have to eat all your greens before you can have your dessert, all
and
that sort of stuff.
And that's probably, you know, has I'm waving my arm here over the top of the microphone that no one can see.
He's waving his arm around here.
Trying to, like, motion towards going back through time. but it's probably been passed on, you know, from a perspective of when food was scarce.
Absolutely.
At a time like that, it would be insulting to not finish your plate.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't like the flavor of it, you just had to finish it because you never knew when it was coming.
Yeah.
But now, that commentary perpetuates, you know, it's been handed down, handed down. Now people are just eating too much, you know, shoving, even from a young age, we're shoving food in front of kids when they don't need it.
Yeah. And I know my dad's like that. He's, you know, he came from that you know, they've gone through Second World War and things like that, and if they grew up poor, and like my dad's like, you must eat. He hates wasting food. Even if he doesn't like it, he'll eat it. I'm like, that is so not good for you.
Yeah, but that's that how it happened. But yeah. I think now maybe this, in the last 5 years, this return to fasting is probably an awakening, an awareness that we are consuming too much. We don't need to eat as much.
Definitely.
And the experiences that people are having when they are fasting and realizing that their existence improves.
Yes.
They feel less sluggish, they have more energy, which seems to a lot of people counterproductive. If I'm not eating as much energy, how can I feel like I've got more energy?
Yeah.
But we'll dive into that today, no doubt as well.
And I do think it's that, you know, as our population, we've got an aging population right now. So people are living a lot longer, but they're not living with quality. Like Alzheimer's, and I actually don't know the stats on Alzheimer's, we'll have to dig them up, but it's pretty scary. I think it's 1 in 2 gets cancer now, you know, like the rates of neurodegeneration, you know, in things like Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis and those things, they're all on the rise. And so we know that eating, you know, we've got, we're more accessible to more quality good foods and that we can eat more, but that's not helping us with these diseases. In fact, they're becoming more and more rampant. And we have to look at all the things that have changed in that. And one, and it's a small thing, but one of the things that has changed is we eat more. We're eating more calories, but we're eating less nutrition. And we're not doing these fasting sort of things. So I think we can, it's, you know, we can look back and go, well, you know, if you've survived past 13 or 14 when you were younger and you didn't die from some huge communicable disease like measles, mumps, the black plague, all of those kind of things, if you could get past it, so the, you know, back in whatever hundreds of years that was, you know, people didn't live as long, but if they got past that and they had those diseases and their immune system was really robust because they'd gotten through that, they actually lived really good quality lives, and they did live until really good ages. But of course, the average age was a lot younger because of these horrific diseases. We had more deaths. Yeah.
Oh, deaths in labour and deaths.
Exactly.
In, you know, I forget who that guy was. The guy who figured out that washing your hands.
Yes.
Between patients was essential for not transmitting disease.
And, yes. A simple thing like that, and hygiene. What's that guy's name? Anyway, it's going to drive you insane. But. It is. But yeah, so when people did get past all of that stuff, they actually lived good, long, healthy lives, and they didn't get any of the modern day stuff that we get now.
Yeah, and I think it's a really important point, because one of the reasons why I commenced fasting when I did quite a while ago was that I changed my exercise habits, and also at the same time I started contemplating the amount of work I was asking my digestive system to do.
That's a so good point.
How much effort am I putting, or pressure am I putting my digestive system under, and is it really necessary? So, and it came off the back of an article I read once that talked about the energy consumption of digesting food, like how much energy is required to actually digest something. And it started making me think around this whole idea of, you know, if you use something repeatedly in other areas of life, it'll wear down.
Yeah, I'm nodding.
There's a nod going on. Yeah. So then I just decided to try and trim back how much I was eating to see what effect it would have. At the time, it didn't really change my shape physically too much. I probably got a little bit more lean in body mass, but you know, I was going to the toilet less. Which made me think, well, I'm creating less waste because I was obviously over-consuming.
Mm-hmm.
So fasting was helping me with that. But then I started noticing these secondary benefits of feeling more acute.
Mm-hmm.
Aware. Yeah, yeah. I was noticing things. Yeah, my vision felt better. Mm-hmm. It sounds strange because I've never had visual issues ever. I've always had, you know, 20/20, but I just felt clearer.
Yeah.
My mind was clearer. My body felt more energetic, less sluggish. And that's because energy wasn't getting diverted.
Yeah.
Blood wasn't getting diverted to my digestive system to try and help process all this stuff that I was shoving in there.
And that's a really common a bit of feedback that I get from patients who fast. They'll say exactly that. Their mind is sharper. You know, it's like you're going from a 250 RAM to a 500 RAM in processing computer. Mm. Suddenly you can process high definition and high processing videos that your computer couldn't normally do, kind of thing. It's that processing power really goes up for people.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons we use it in things like Alzheimer's. So.
And I think that's probably why also at the same time, off the back of the fasting, like fasting sort of came in, I don't know, somewhere in 5 to 10 year
it's
range.
The last decade. Yeah. Really,
and then in the last sort of 5 years, mm-hmm. keto has come in,
mm-hmm.
and ketogenesis happens when you fast.
Yes, like, yeah, it's a natural byproduct.
Fasting. So I feel like that's the natural progression is that people have gone, oh, I'm fasting, I'm feeling better. What's going on here? And then they're getting this. And then the whole idea of being in that ketogenic state does help people who want to access some of that stuff as well. Not appropriate for everybody, but it's interesting that the timeline, if you look at the fad cycle,
yes,
that's how that's transpired.
That's very true.
So let's go into a bit of a chat around how you see fasting being used in a practical sense. Like, let's break this down into two different ways. There's habitual sort of people who incorporate into their lifestyle, mm-hmm. and then the secondary part of it is fasting for some kind of therapeutic gain.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just start with the habitual lifestyle sort of practice of fasting.
And
then what might happen?
Okay.
We'll do that first.
And I think also why you would fast. I think that's important to cover first, and then I'll go through
those. How we do it. Let's go back to why and the impact.
And I think I have to say here, you know, like fasting, and Marcus said this at the beginning, if you're unsure, if you've never fasted before, there are lots of different ways to do it and some are quite safe. But if you're unsure, you should always talk to a healthcare practitioner first. What we're talking about here is not calorie restriction, unhealthy eating habits. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about short, monitored, studied fasting to promote health, not as an unhealthy way of building an unhealthy relationship with food. I really want to make a point of that. Also, if you have any health conditions, you should speak to a healthcare practitioner before commencing any fasting, especially if you've got any conditions that involve the cardiovascular system, or if you're prone to fainting, syncope, passing out, any of those sort of things, low blood pressure. Always talk to a healthcare practitioner before undertaking anything that we're about to discuss. Now, disclaimer over. Okay, so there are so many different types of fasting, and when to use and what type of fasting to use really depend on why you're using it. So the studies in fasting really started around Alzheimer's, and that, you're right, that came off the back of the keto diets, because we suddenly saw people with Alzheimer's making improvements with high-fat ketogenic type diets. And I think, and I'm extrapolating here, but I assume they went into further research and found that maybe it's not just the ketone bodies and high fat, that it's actually the whole process of what happens when we fast. So I might as well go through what happens when we fast. So when we fast, there's a few different things that happen, but the microbiome, and you know, Marcus and I and Rach and a few of others have spoken on podcasts numerous times about the huge role of the microbiome and why naturopaths are so obsessed with treating the gut. And we know that your microbiota and your microbiome actually are responsible for the expression of a lot of your genes and the interplay between your genes and the environment, which is what we call epigenetics. And one of the things that we know, that when you fast, it completely changes gene expression in the microbiome. In fact, fasting resets your microbiome. It's like the whole microbiome gets a reboot. It wipes out all the guys that are maybe disease promoting and encourages the guys that would come along in starvation and things like that, that to really come and grow in bigger levels. So we get a whole change in your microbiome, and we know that from the change in microbiome, we're going to get a downregulation of inflammation, changes in your neurotransmitters such as serotonin and dopamine and GABA and things like that. So there's a huge interplay that goes along there. There are these amazing little cells in our brains called microglia cells. Now, the brain, you know, I don't even know, you probably know this more than me, but the brain, they used to think of the brain and the central nervous system as being the only part of the body that was immune to the immune system. It had no immune system in it.
Hmm.
And what we found now that that's just not true. This is how we can have diseases like Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis and even Alzheimer's and Huntington's disease and all these sort of things, is that they used to think it was just a breach in something called the blood-brain barrier. And then immune cells and macrophages were passing through the blood-brain barrier and into the brain tissue. We now know that the brain and the central nervous system has its own immune system. And the immune cells are things called microglia cells. Now, in our normal immune system, they are macrophages, and in brain tissue, they're called microglia. And what happens with these microglia cells are, if you're stressed, if you have a head trauma, a virus and bacterial infections, they trigger these microglia cells to say, hey, something horrible has happened here. You need to get to, you know, cleaning it up. And especially in brain tissue, these microglia cells go over the top and they clean stuff up. Now, what should happen is then the immune system should switch back on. We call it a switch from an M1 to an M2 in macrophages, and I think it's the same in microglia cells. They should then say, the infection's gone, time to turn off. But we know in chronic stress, some of these really stealthy viral infections like the Epstein-Barr virus and a few other horrid viruses like that, and head trauma, that what happens is that these microglia cells get turned on and they don't turn back off again. And over time, they start to overprune synapses. This is why in a lot of neurodegenerative diseases like MS and things like Alzheimer's, is people lose their memory. They used to think it was a process of the disease. They now know it's an overpruning of synapses due to these microglia cells just pruning away everything. And a part of aging, you know, as you get older and you go to the fridge and you open it and you think, why did I go to the fridge? You walk back out of the kitchen again and then you think, oh, I wanted that bar that I put right up the back. You go back to the fridge, open again. You're like, why am I standing in front of the fridge? You go back out again. Like, all of those things are due to these microglia cells overpruning the your neurons. So we know when we fast that we actually switch microglia cells into turning off, and you basically halt them. So you get, and this is why your vision comes back and your memory improves, because you're suddenly now laying down new neural pathways and it gives your brain a break from the pruning and it actually will reset it. So that's the amazing thing that fasting does.
So it's a bit like a hedge.
It is.
You prune it back.
You prune it back.
And then let it grow again.
Exactly.
New and fresh.
And yeah. And the fasting reboots the immune system in such a way that you stimulate new stem cells, and the stem cells will clean up autoimmune cells. And so by the time you go back to eating again, depending on the type of fast that you've done, those microglia cells are no longer overactive.
Mm.
And that's what a lot of studies have been done on in things like multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, Huntington's disease, and Alzheimer's. And if you can turn those microglia cells off through fasting, which seems to be one of the most effective ways to do it, mind you, then you stop neurodegeneration. The other amazing thing that happens is in things like MS, they've proven that because you're stimulating new stem cells, you actually start to regenerate myelin, which is what stops happening in the MS disease. Your immune cells attack the myelin sheath. In a intermittent fast or fasting, they've proven that you calm the immune system down, if you want. Like, when you fast, all your body's processes turn down to conserve energy, and one of those processes is the immune system. So the turning down of the immune system, it's like in any autoimmune disease, it's overactive. So in turning down that autoimmunity, the immune system finally gets reined back in. And then what happens in fasting is we reboot or we create stem cells. Those stem cells go out and then they clean up the autoimmune cells. So when you start to eat again, those autoimmune cells are gone. And so you shouldn't, unless you go back and do all the things that caused autoimmunity in the same place as at first place, you don't have as much autoimmune cells floating around. And so you basically get a whole reboot of the immune system, which is amazing. And then on top of that, we downregulate inflammation. So that's all the amazing things that fasting does, which has a massive application on disease.
Huge, huge, huge. And there's more, there is a little bit more I'll add in, but I think I just want to add something else about open-mindedness for our listeners, because if you're listening to the podcast, you're clearly interested in information and education. And what I always find fascinating is that, particularly in the world of health and well-being, there's this application of finite that people like to use. You know, we know it all now.
Yeah. Right?
And then something will be found, and it will reset how everything else is viewed. And even recently, we talk about immune system in the brain. it was only a couple of years ago, I think, when I was at uni and you saw a picture of the lymphatic system.
Yes, I was going to mention that. Thank you.
It stopped at the neck. So yeah. You'd have lymph nodes going into your neck and then in your head there was just nothing.
There was nothing.
All the pictures had nothing. And then there was a scientist who just a few years ago,
might have been me. It was 2018.
All right, 2 years ago, yeah. 2018, yeah. Found that the lymphatic system actually exists in the head.
Yeah.
So despite the fact that we've made all this progress, we have all these amazing machines and amazing technology to analyze everything, it's only 2 years ago that we found out that we actually have lymphatic drainage coming from our head. So,
and it's part of the meninges. It's separate. And the guy was amazed that he said in that, I listened to an interview, he said, we thought we knew it all. They were staining immune cells in, I think it was mice again, and they stained and they could see immune cells sitting in the cranial system. And they were like, nah. And then that's how they did in humans. And that's how they found that we have the meninges have their own lymphatic system. And that's how these microglia cells communicate with the rest of the body.
Which is amazing, right? So they, it then raises a whole series of other questions then. So
what else do we not know?
Well, if we have this function, this system in our head that is clearly there to support our brain's function.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we've only known about it for 2 years, we haven't really even had time to study it.
Yep.
What impact is everything else that we're doing in our life? Like the lymphatic system's there to try and take away toxicity out of our body. So, you know, bring the leftover fluid that gets taken to our body. Yep. Some of it comes back through, you know, obviously your capillaries and veins and everything back to your heart, but then the rest of the fluid, the extracellular fluid, the interstitial fluid comes back through the body, through your lymphatic system. So why is it there in our brain and what is the impact of that? Yep. And what are we doing in our life that can interfere with the normal function of these cells and also the flow of the lymphatic system in the brain? And we don't know yet. No one knows yet.
No, they're started clinical trials on lymphatic agents in Alzheimer's to see if that makes an impact on the disease. But you know, if the drug companies are doing that, if we can simply improve lymphatic flow, it should have an improvement on clearing debris out of the brain.
So it's fascinating. And this is a lesson in open-mindedness and a lesson in trying to gather and, arrange information and place it correctly and not forgetting that we have evolved over thousands of years, and evolution from, I guess, from a very simplistic perspective involves improvement.
Yes.
You know, if something's not as good and we evolve, we tend to evolve into a better form. You know, why do we have these super bacteria at the moment? Mm-hmm. Because they've evolved to overcome
antibiotics,
the things that we're challenging with. So evolution in itself tries to improve the situation, if you want to believe in that, that way. I'll just make it, not everyone believes that. Yeah. But so let's get back on track with fasting.
Yeah.
I just find that fascinating.
Yes. Thank you for saying that, because I was literally thinking about mentioning that whole lymphatic system.
I'm just going to, based on what you just said then, I just want to quickly read something from an article. Mm-hmm. This was from 2014. They did a study in USC, which I think is the University of Southern California.
Southern California, yeah.
Yeah. What they did, they did fasting for periods of no food at all for 2 to 4 days over the course of 6 months. And what they found was the body would kill off older and damaged immune cells and generate new ones.
Yep.
This is the explanation, he said. When you starve, the system tries to save energy. And one of the things it can do to save energy is to recycle a lot of the immune cells that are not needed, especially those that may be damaged. What we started noticing in both our human and animal work is that the white blood cell count goes down with prolonged fasting. Yep. Then when you refeed, the blood cells come back up. So we started thinking, well, where does that come from? Mm. What they found was that, as you said, our stem cells, there's no way I'm going to say this correctly, hematopoietic.
I
got it. Yes, cells. When I was reading this, I'm like, I'm going to stuff this up on the podcast.
That's how you say it.
get kicked into gear again, and they start generating new,
yes,
new cells, and obviously those new cells have more effective for us.
It's so, like a natural stem cell transplantation, yeah, in a sense.
And this is probably something that, going back through time, we've been designed to do.
Yes.
Through having enforced fasting upon us through climate issues or environmental issues, whatever it might have been, illness.
Yeah.
We've gone away from that in the modern era.
But you look at it too, we've tried to modernize it. You look at what chemo does, and it's trying to do the same thing. It's killing all the cells.
Yeah.
You either have a stem cell transplant, or then you stop chemo in the hope that it will reboot it, because then your system has to clear all the toxins of chemo out. But yeah, chemo in effect is trying to do what you can do, not to say that you shouldn't use chemo and things like that, but to try and do what a natural fast in the body can do by itself. So
yeah,
we've tried to mimic that.
And in the article, it even says that. It says,
oh, there you go,
prolonged fasting also lowered levels of IGF-1, a growth factor hormone that Longo and others have found linked to aging, tumor progression, and yes, cancer risk.
Yeah.
And it talks about the PKA gene,
yeah,
which we don't need to go into that level of complexity here, but it's definitely a really interesting study that they did then. And again, it's only 4 years ago. So in the terms of medical science,
it's new.
If it's a new finding, they'll have to repeat it 400 times before we start getting any kind of progression and application in
science. Well, and that's right. You know, the latest studies that I've seen are around 2018, and that's just a couple of years ago, and they're in mouse models. And so they're now doing a lot of, and they've done small amounts in clinical trials in humans. In fact, in NMS, they did chemo-like drugs to kill the immune system, and then they rebooted it with a fasting mimicking diet. To make the stem cells come back faster, and they've just started those studies. That'll be 10 years before we see the outcomes of those sort of things. So we are just starting to see them.
To see how it works a little bit. But if we take it from a non-clinical science, a non-research science perspective, and we think about it purely from a physiological perspective, a biochemical perspective, we already have answers there.
Yes.
All the studies are trying to do is just validate what we kind of already know, right? And
exactly,
what common sense would suggest. So if we look into that, then we go, we've had a fair crack at describing what happens when you fast, what's going on in the body. Let's just go down. We haven't really touched on the energy component in that. Mm-hmm. If we're not eating,
you have to conserve all your energy.
We're conserving our energy, and there's a series of reactions that take place in the body.
Yeah, and it goes into really, and you can run through them if you want, but basically when you break down and you're not consuming energy, the body will just do what's critical.
Yeah.
So it's like you're only running critical processes there, which is how all of this other stuff will work.
And people think that if they're hungry, it's like this craziness comes across them.
Yes.
I need to get food. I've got to eat. Oh, geez, I'm going to pass out.
Yes.
How many times do you hear that?
Geez,
if I don't eat, I'm going to pass out.
Yes.
Pretty sure everyone's been in a situation where they're late with their Christmas shopping and they're darting around and they get hungry, but they don't have time.
Yeah.
Because they've got to find their presents before the shop shuts.
And then they forget about it.
And then 10 minutes later, they're not hungry anymore.
Exactly.
Because their body has changed to start generating energy from somewhere else.
Exactly.
And that somewhere else is our storage mechanisms.
Yep.
And we have these in place. We've evolved to have them in place. And when I talk about fasting, I often describe the three alternatives for food. So when we eat food, what happens? We either use it straight away, we store it for a later use, or we pull it out, or wear it out. So if we have the ability to evacuate something that's not needed from our body, why would it ever choose to store it?
Yeah.
Like, as from an evolutionary perspective, why would our body have evolved to go, well, I need to pack some of this away just in case? And that just in case is because we had used to go through periods of time where we didn't eat. So we need to reintroduce these periods of time to try and help our body, engage in that normal process.
And I think it's a natural clearing out, we have a spring clean once a year in your house, unless you're a hoarder. And, and that's the kind of what we do, right? In some ways, we're hoarders. And you think of what an inside of a hoarder's house looks like. It's no different to our bodies. Rather than having a spring clean, being minimalistic, taking all the sort of stuff out, Marie, what's her name?
Marie Kondo.
A Marie Kondo way of taking care of your body.
Yep.
You know?
That's not a bad way of looking at it too, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so the whole idea of energy consumption then around this is that, you know, your body will conserve.
Yes, that's it what does.
It's
trying to do.
It shuts down and then it switches. It switches to start getting nutrition from somewhere else because you're not getting it through your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there are a series of processes that take place in your body that allow that to happen. So just for instance, and we'll touch on this again in the weight loss podcast that we'll do soon, but that like glucagon, which is a hormone that your body produces, its role is to go into your fat cells and help take the fat mm-hmm. out of your fat cells and reconvert it back so that it's in a usable form in your bloodstream to generate energy. And when we do that, the reason also why we get clarity and smoother performance of our brain is that we have really even function in terms of our energy levels. We don't have any spiking up and down because fat that takes longer to burn, but it's very energy dense.
You get 4 units. So if you get 4 bits of energy from 1 unit of fat versus 1 to 1 in protein and carbohydrates. So it's more bang for your buck.
Is it 4 or is it 17?
Oh, I thought it was 4. It's 4 to 1, but that may be in different ratios. But
we might be looking. Depends on what we're measuring.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll look that up just so for clarity. But whilst you go, so I think that's really important that people understand that energetic component and the conservation of energy from other areas, like allowing things to shut down and have a rest.
Yeah.
Allowing your digestive system, which is an energy dense, high energy use system, allows blood flow to be diverted away from that, allows your body to focus on other things that it requires a Marie Kondo.
Yes. Decluttering.
Yeah.
Should we go through the types of fasting? Because there are so many. Or did you want to add a comment before I go through the different types?
No, you
of
go
fasting?
Through that. I'll have a quick look here.
All right. So there's quite a few different types of fasting. So people think fasting and people, like, if you don't know about fasting, just think about, oh, that just means, abstinence from food. And that is one type of fasting, but you're going to hear a lot of different types of words thrown around when it comes to fasting. So there's the fasting mimicking diet, which was Longo. He was the guy that's doing a lot of studies, and he has a product called Prolon that you can't get in Australia, you can get in the US. But a fasting mimicking diet is where over a 5-day period, you eat 700 calories for a day, and you eat certain types of foods that the body is nutrient dense, but doesn't make the body, it keeps the body in fasting cycle. So a fasting mimicking diet, you still eat on that diet, but it's a very heavily calorie restricted. And that's over a 5-day period. And they're eating things like macadamias, olives, kale chips, tomato soup. It's very based on the Mediterranean. It's a plant-based diet. Again, you can't buy, if you actually wanted to do the Prolon therapy, you can't buy that in Australia. But you can do a fasting mimicking diet by eating under 700 calories a day of certain foods. That I recommend you have a healthcare practitioner work with you for. You do that 5 days once a month for 3 months. That is a fasting mimicking diet. There's a lot of studies that have been done on that. They definitely did a mouse model. So they inject mice with something called EAE, which is a MS mimicking disease. And then they've done lots of studies in that. And it was shown to regenerate myelin, slow the disease process down. So that's, again, your body mimics fasting. Now, here's something interesting. One of the reasons they found this, and I think Longo was one of the guys that found this, he used to be a bacteriologist, or I'm not sure. Anyway, he was studying yeast, and he found that yeast with a certain gene expression lived 5 times as long as normal yeast. So then they went looking for animals with the same gene expression, and they found it in mice. And again, mice that express this gene expression, the gene makes the body think it's fasting, but it's not. So this is how I'm getting to how this fasting mimicking diet came about. Then they looked for populations in humans, and in Ecuador there are tribes, there is a tribe that have this gene that makes their body think they're fasting, but they don't. So they eat a normal calorie intake, but their genes signal to the body all the things that would happen if we were to fast. Now these tribes live a lot longer, they're short, which is part of that, you know, part of that gene, but they live a lot longer and a lot healthier lives. And so Longo went around to figure out how he could switch these genes on. And it's one of the reasons, and one of the ways that fasting works is it decreases your sensitivity to growth hormone, which is why these tribes were short. And so it's down regulating the human growth hormone that has all the promoting effects of fasting. So, and that's why it works in things like cancer. So the fasting mimicking diet, when you have a calorie restriction of 700 calories with plant-based certain foods, that stimulates those same genes that these people naturally had. So you still, your body still fasts even though you're eating. That's a great way if you've never fasted before. If you're maybe someone more like Marcus and I, we're both quite lean beans. We've got low BMIs quite naturally, even though we both...
Ectomorphs.
Yeah, we're ectomorphs. We eat a lot, but you know, we've got quite fast metabolisms. I tend to use this type of fasting in people that, you know, are stressed about cutting off food, whether that might cause them more stress than not. Then that's when I would use a fasting mimicking diet. Great studies been done on it though, and it's just as effective as fasting. Then we've got intermittent fasting, and then there's a couple of intermittent fastings. There's things like time fasting, the 5-2 diet, but timed fasting, which is what I'm thinking you practice and it's what I practice, is where you fast for a 16-hour period and then you eat within an 8-hour window. So for me, the meals are closed at 7 p.m., kitchen closed. And then I would fast all the way through until about 12 noon. So I'm on a fast right now. What are we now? 1 o'clock. So I won't eat till 2 o'clock actually. And I'll eat between 2 and 7. So I'm eating on a much smaller window today. So between a 5-hour window. And then I just fast again overnight. That will still stimulate a lot of the regrowth stuff, and it rests your digestive system. For diseases where you really want to modify the immune system, it's not as effective. You need to do either a fasting mimicking diet or a regular fast or a 24-hour fast, but it still has huge benefits because you're giving the digestive system a break, which allows your immune system to rebuild and things like that. And for most people, just looking for the benefits of fasting, which may be more into the lines of weight loss and better memory, a timed fasting and eating between a certain window, generally 16 and 8, so you eat between 8 hours, so general work hours, fast overnight, that works very well for most people. The other version of that is the 5-2 diet. That's where on 2 days out of the week, women would consume 500 calories and men would consume 600 calories for 2 days. Generally, people don't do it consecutively, so it might be a Monday and a Thursday, you have a 500 calorie day. Then you eat normally for the rest of the time. Again, that's like a timed fast, that works quite well for people. Again, you only then have to, you still get to eat on a day. Again, it's not what I would use in really hardcore diseases, or again, if people are just getting used to the fasting and things like that, this is maybe how I'd introduce it. It's also a really great way when people are working up towards doing a longer fast to reboot stuff. People lose their addiction to food during either of the timed fasts. Because I think we, like you were mentioning before, people are like, oh, if I don't eat, I'm going to pass out. It helps people move through that having to go
and grab something.
Yeah. I never forget being in India and traveling with girlfriends of mine, and the days were planned around each meal. And I naturally don't think like that. So intermittent fasting for me is easy. I don't know if you're a bit the same, but there are definitely people that are what I would call foodies, where, you know, it's about getting from each meal to the next. So,
well, I love when I'm on holiday planning out, you know, going to great places to eat and exploring that and that sort of thing. But yeah, the thing about eating is also to be aware of the flow on the downhill effect. Yes. Also with the fasting, like the 5-2, I know people have tried 5-2 and they'll restrict on Monday.
And then
the next day they'll eat more.
Yes.
You know, and then it sort of defeats the whole purpose of
of
that restriction in the first place. But yeah, like I'll plan it out and then I will make sure that, say for instance, well, I was just in Noosa, I'll eat brunch and eat dinner.
Yeah.
That's it. But I'll eat probably more than I would normally eat because I'm somewhere else.
Yes. Yeah, and you're out having a nice meal.
Yeah. But I'm aware of that impact. You know? Yeah. So the there was something else I was going, but it's just I'm at the fridge door looking for the bar that I can't remember.
That's okay. I'll keep going and it'll come back. And I think actually what you say there is a good point, you know. Intermittent fasting, if you're eating between an 8-hour window, that doesn't mean you eat more. calories outside of that. In that time. Mm. You know, like it's, if I'm eating like today, you know, I'll eat, hopefully I get time to before I eat before I go to the gym, and then I'll come home and have dinner. And so it's like I've skipped breakfast. I don't go in and put an extra meal. I make sure I eat really nutritionally dense food. I am lean, so I eat quite a high fat diet, not to get into ketogenesis, I'm not, but just to make sure I'm getting plenty of calories and things like that, make sure I'm getting protein. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important, I think, to consult with a healthcare practitioner, because if you go and intermittently fast and then you're eating 5 billion calories, you know, in between, you put more pressure on your digestive system. And that's not the point. It's to eat really nutritionally dense foods that fill you up. So when you're doing that, that's why I quite like the mimicking diet, the fasting mimicking diet, because it is a calorie restriction.
Yeah.
But for people just getting into it, the intermittent time fasting to break that habitual 3 meal a day having to look for food is a great way to start and give your digestive system a rest. So things like inflammatory bowel disease, IBS, all of those sort of things, really useful for that, because generally people are eating quite well anyway.
Yeah, I think that's I did remember what I was going to say, and sometimes
we found
the entry point I might give to people is to maintain the same structure and the same eating pattern that they do, but just reduce the amount. So for instance, if I was to go and get sushi, instead of getting 3 hand rolls, I might get 2, and then I might even try and reduce that down to 1, and see how I go. You know, how let feel my body, allow myself to get used to having a little bit less, and then for a week go back to eating normally, and then the following week, I would, and so I might do that reduction in volume over a few weeks, and then have a normal week, and then go back to after the normal week, a 5-2. So missing the meal is far more doable than just hitting it straight up. Yeah. And then I'm not going to want to rebound. Because if you then go and rebound and eat more, you're actually creating all the stress that we're trying to move away from in the first place.
And that's definitely something I want to cover. You know, let me finish these and then I'll come back to that. Yeah. So I digress. We've got a regular fast, which is an abstinence from eating for a set amount of time as worked out. You know, I've seen people do 21-day water fasts, and I'm not recommending this, definitely without medical supervision, but I, fellow naturopath, had psoriatic arthritis, so really bad arthritis caused by the psoriasis disease in the joints, debilitating. And he slowly worked up over 3 years doing all these different types of fasts to a 21-day fast, completely cured it, gone.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I have seen, I know there's like the Tolmans are on retreats and things in Bali where they're doing 21-day water fasts and rebooting people's, you know, systems over things like that. But again, that's supervised and all those sort of things. So that's a regular fast. We've got alternate fasting. So people eat every other day, and then on the days that they are eating, they're consuming 500 calories. So, you know, very small amounts of food on one day, eat normally the next, 500 calorie one day, eat normally the next. There's a full day fast, so you do 24-hour fasting one day a week, where you would, for 24 hours, you eat nothing. We sometimes do that. And then you've got the warrior diet, which is a relatively extreme form of intermittent fasting. So you eat very little, just maybe a few servings of raw fruits and vegetables during a 20-hour fasting window, and then you eat one larger meal at night. And so the eating window is 4 hours. Now, that is actually something I would, not deliberately, but I sometimes, if I'm just busy and things like that, I'll eat within a 4-hour window. But generally, I suggest that to people when they've been fasting for a long time. There's definitely ways you can work in and out of fasting. So they're the major types of fasting. I think the big things to note is, with how fasting works and how it reboots your immune system, if you then fast for a health condition, say something like a neurodegenerative disease, and you do your intermittent fasting, and then you go back to doing all the same things that were driving the disease in the first place, long-term fasting's great. It'll give you your system a break and you will get improvements, but you're not going to have these chances of reversing diseases. Yeah. Whereas if you can do, you know, I know on the Walls protocol, they do a 5-day fast, and I'm talking full fast, with the calorie, the mimicking. Well, she doesn't actually. I think she fully fasts for 5 days once a month. And then so she's rebooting, but she's eating super well the rest of the time. So you imagine if you are fasting, either doing through a fasting mimicking diet, so reduced calorie for 5 days. 5 days is a good amount of time to really reboot. That's really in the studies, that's what they showed gives the really sort of maximum amount. That or longer, but again, these should be medically supervised or worked with a health practitioner. If you have a 5 day fast or restricted calorie intake on that time, and then you go back onto a really great anti-inflammatory, great diet, then you're going to feed and support the immune system to continue to stay anti-inflammatory and to rebuild myelin if that's what you wanted to do, or rebuild neural pathways, or if you're working with Parkinson's, to balance dopamine and to improve your microbiome so the effects are long lasting. So I want to say that fasting, you shouldn't, I think it should always be incorporated in part of a healthy eating program, or should be incorporated in part of a long-term plan. I think fasting has really amazing effects when it's utilized properly, but I don't want it to become, you know, like sometimes keto got a bit fatty, you know, where people are just eating really high fat diets and but they're not doing all the other things around making sure that their vegetable intake's up and eating really healthy foods. And I think that's really important to note with intermittent fasting.
Same as like paleo.
Yes,
great,
exactly.
I can eat as much bacon as I want.
Exactly. This is not how this works, and this is not a shortcut, you know, but if done properly as part of a full plan, then the fasting diets, whether it be intermittent fasting or fasting mimicking or whatever it is that you're doing, have huge, huge benefits. And when we, and flowing on to when to use it, you know, like it's been proven to be just as effective as drugs and things like multiple sclerosis. They're using it in Huntington's disease, which is a horrible disease. It slows the progression of it. Alzheimer's, it's showing huge improvements in Alzheimer's. It's showing major improvement in things like Crohn's disease. Alzheimer's, I think I've mentioned, inflammatory bowel disease.
Stop giving, putting stuff in the digestive system.
Amazing, isn't it?
And it gets a chance to heal.
I know, can't. It doesn't make common sense at all. Bipolar and schizophrenia, they've started to use it for with amazing effects. Anxiety, depression, anything that has an inflammatory, immune-driven sort of pathway to it. I'm sure we're going to find it in more. This is all that they're studying at the moment. And yeah, there's so many studies. There is a study, and I can't find it, and I sort of half don't want to quote it in case I got it wrong, but one of these mouse models where they give them MS through this virus that mimics MS, and they've done, I can find all the ones on the fasting mimicking diet. Maybe I was hallucinated this, but I'm sure I read one where they fasted these little mice for 21 days. Like, it was a big fast, and they'd crippled these mice. Like, I could say some bad words, but these mice were not good. Like, they weren't moving, and they completely reversed their and you know, all this disappeared. And when they went to re-give them the MS disease, they were immune to it. They'd built up immune antibodies, so you couldn't make them sick again.
Amazing.
It was amazing. That was a big long fast. And then they've done other studies in these 5 day fasting mimicking diets where, you know, they really, it halts or slows the progression of the disease, and hence they're doing lots of studies in it at the moment. Same with Parkinson's, Huntington's, Alzheimer's is where they're doing major studies. And I did see a great study on bipolar and another one on schizophrenia. So
I think it's also some important things to note on this too. Definitely one is the rebound. And a lot of the criticism around fasting is that if you restrict yourself, your body will rebound and you'll put weight on, you know,
that was such an old school thing, wasn't it?
Isn't it? But there's two parts of that conversation. One is that a lot of the times when they've researched that, they only restrict people for, say, 6 weeks. Or
exactly.
And it's not enough for the body to actually change its physiological pathways and processes long term. And then also, of course, if you go from eating heaps and you take it away and it has an impact, and then you return to eating heaps, it's going to have the same impact as what you were, that put you there in the first place.
Exactly.
So it's not, it's,
it's not the diet. It was just eating too much.
So
in the first
it depends
place
on what outcome you want. And that the application of fasting to an individual's lifestyle, which is, for instance, like with you or what I had done, was purpose driven around health and wellbeing outcomes and what I required. Now, there is, you know, some lessons, even anecdotally from my experience, that are worth sharing. That I did the marathon last year, and I was still, the last time we did a marathon, I was consuming, you know, heaps because I was doing triathlon and I was eating so much food. This time I was probably eating about a third of the amount of food that I was eating last time. And when I got into training, I felt amazing because I was a little bit lighter and I got a little bit over enthusiastic and was pushing myself.
No, you know, never get over enthusiastic.
Exactly. But I depleted myself.
Yeah, right.
I got a version, I reckon, of a thing called RED, which is Relative Energy Deficiency Syndrome. Mm-hmm. And for like a month, I was wiped out. I had to just take a month of eating normally again.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I have not really done any regular fasting.
Yep.
I've just been eating more food to try and maintain, because I'm still running a bit now, so I want to make sure I don't deplete myself. So I had applied it to my lifestyle, but mm-hmm. when I readjusted another variable in my lifestyle, my physical activity,
which was increased training, yeah,
I didn't readjust how my habits around fasting. And that's not to say it's not worth me doing at all,
no,
but it's probably worth doing at different stages, mm-hmm. and like last time, and in different ways. So perhaps you wouldn't call it fasting. You can, in some sense, I guess. But last time when I did the marathon, after my long runs, I'd go out for 3 hours of outside running, and you depleted all your glucose stores. And your glycogen's wiped out. You're in fat burning phase,
mm-hmm.
and I would not eat for as long as I could that day. Mm-hmm. I'd just keep going and going. I'd have water. That was it. No electrolytes, no food, nothing, just to allow my body to stay in the fat burning, to prepare it for the hardship of race day. I get 2, 3, 4 hours, but by the time you finish, if that little window of fasting, you might have gone 7, 8 hours without eating that day, because you get up, you have a piece of toast or you have a banana, and then you're out running.
Yeah,
you don't run, you don't eat when you're running for 3 hours, you mm-hmm. don't eat afterwards. So there's fasting there, but then you'd restore yourself,
you
have a great big meal.
Mm-hmm.
And overnight, your body would refill all its glycogen and so forth. But but then you probably wouldn't incorporate like a whole day fast if you're training to that intensity. You just have to place it correctly. But that's why we suggest speaking to someone when you're doing this stuff, so you make sure you get it right and you don't end up...
Yes, causing trouble. And that's actually a couple of things that... No, I really like... So like, say fasting mimicking diets where you're doing 5 days once a month for 3 months. And the things around fasting is, so you know what happens, generally it's day 2 or 3, you get exhausted. Like, and I'm talking like exhausted, where it's like you've just, someone's pulled the socket out of you. Like, that's really normal. If you were going to do, say, a 5 day fast or intermittent fasting or anything like that, you need to plan not to exercise those days. So, I mean, I exercise pretty much every day, but I always do it in the afternoon. I make sure I eat before I go to the gym, and I eat straight after. If I'm doing a 5 day, I'm about to do a 5 day fasting mimicking diet, I will not go to the gym those days. So I'll stop my regular training, and I'll sleep more. So I'll make sure that I get at least 8 to 9 hours of really good quality sleep. That's naturally what generally happens on a fasting mimicking diet anyway. Make sure you plan everything. So you need to make sure you're planning to eat certain foods and that you've got your meals planned out, because there's nothing worse than if you aren't planned, or if you're out and you're at a, I don't know, say you have to go to a conference and they've got food there and you're meant to be doing your fasting mimicking diet and you've got, you know, hors d'oeuvres in front of you and you break it, you just end up giving yourself a really hard time. So I think if you're going to do any fasting, you have to be really planned. Don't exercise, make sure you get extra rest, and make sure someone supports you through it. And again, if you've got certain health conditions, please don't fast without talking to a healthcare professional, just to make sure that it's suitable for you, especially if you've got prone to low blood pressure, passing out easily. If you're a lean ectomorph like Max and I suggest speaking to someone just to make sure that they, adjust those 700 calories that you might eat. And again, if you're a lean being like us, I'd probably suggest doing more a fasting mimicking diet rather than an abstinence diet, and just making sure that you're eating the right foods. Know that if you do a fasting mimicking diet, it won't work unless you're eating certain foods. Like, if you try and do it yourself on 700 calories but you're eating McDonald's chips, you're not going to get into where you need to be to heal.
And also, that's a really good point. You're better positioned to answer this than what I am, but if you have 20 calories of spinach, you're also getting a whole bunch of other nutritional value.
You're going to throw out your micronutrients and things like that.
Versus 20 calories of chips.
Yeah.
So it's not just the calories.
Exactly.
It's not just the energy. You need to make sure you're getting all the nutrient value.
Yes, there. That's really important, especially on the restricted calorie diets. You know, the prolonged therapy that they put together is really well thought out. And so I've done my own version because I'm a prolonged practitioner. I can use it for my clients in the US. I can't use it because we can't get it in Australia yet.
Yeah.
But I know exactly what's in those kits, so I can read.
And if you think about what we discussed as a process of allowing your body to shed itself of stuff that it doesn't need anymore to reboot and regenerate.
Yeah.
You need the building blocks.
You don't need to be putting crap in there.
Yeah, so you need to have all those nutrients in there.
Yes.
And what you want it to do is to use the energy of non-functional mass.
Yeah.
Right? Like fat.
Yes.
Right? That's where you want to be deriving a lot of your energy from when you're in that state,
mm-hmm.
not by depleting your body.
Exactly.
Of everything else.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Good.
I don't have too much more to add.
No.
Apart from it's amazing. And you know what I love about fasting? It's really cheap.
Yeah, it does.
You know, it's not something that, you know, yes, you can do the prolonged therapy, but really, like, it's not something anyone can really commoditize, you know, like... It's something that if you've got a health practitioner that can help you, or if you know if you're really super healthy, you can get online and do some research of just basic intermittent fasting yourself.
Yeah,
the benefits, you know, there aren't really any downsides to practicing fasting unless you've got these health conditions or you don't do it properly. But if it's done properly, there are, you know, done properly, monitored, all of those sort of things, there are no downsides to fasting.
Yeah.
There are only huge amounts of health benefits. You know, if you want to be sharper, a sharper tool in your shed.
Yeah.
If you want to know why you went to the fridge or walked into that room and just get some of that basic stuff back. And then just the whole reboot that it has to your immune system and down regulating inflammation and things like that. Then, you know, I love it because it's something I can do with pretty much all my patients. It doesn't cost them anything. It gives mm-hmm. people a huge amount of control back. I feel like fasting, when done properly, actually gives people a healthier relationship with food because they realize that they don't need it so much. Mm. And that they, how much better they feel when they're eating really good food and things like that. So
totally.
I'm such a massive fan of it.
And it's great for the environment too.
It's so good for the environment, which is, you know, win-win-win.
We all win. Well, thank you. As I said, next Monday, 17th of Feb, we're going to have an information session for people who have more questions.
On Facebook, right?
On Facebook. It'll be Facebook Live. We may have it in a closed group forum because mm-hmm. people might have some questions, but there will be some sort of information on our Instagram and Facebook on the day awesome. To allow people to know how to be involved.
6 p.m. is that right?
6 p.m. Yeah.
Be there or be square, as I would say.
Yep, that's it. And it's right in the middle of your 4-hour fasting, 4-hour eating window. If you
so we can all eat. Yeah, I'll be eating. So yep. I'll be chomping away on my nuts and seeds and olives.
But any other questions? Obviously, if you can't join, you can email us, touch base via our social media, and we can help you there too.
Awesome.
All right, I'm off to get lunch.
Yeah, you're
not
halfway down to speaking about all of that.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Super Well podcast. For more information on any of our episodes, head over to www.superwell.com.au and you can get all the episodes there. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can also find links to iTunes, Stitcher and Spotify. And if you want to continue the conversation on with us, then head over to our Instagram page at LiveSuperWell and follow us there and comment under each episode. If you want to give us any feedback, you can also get in touch via email on the webpage too. So until next episode, live super well.